It's time for Ask Dr. Daria on RadioMD.com. Do you have a question? Tweet your questions to @ShareCare Inc. using #ShareCareRadio or email your questions to AskDrDaria@RadioMD.com. Here's Dr. Daria.
Welcome back. Next up, Ask Dr. Daria. I'll be answering your questions about all things health and wellness. So let's just dive in. This first question is about food coloring. And we just had a segment on natural foods. And so this is just kind of the opposite. And this was our listener said, does food dye coloring number yellow, number 4 and 5 and others cause hyperactivity in children? And, you know, that's a really tough question. There have been some assertions that food additives, even for artificial sweeteners, colors, and preservatives, do contribute to ADHD. But to date, while some studies suggest that there may be a link, there's not really solid evidence that they do, which is the stance that the FDA takes. Now, different countries have different labels. The EU requires that food and drink with artificial colors be labeled as having possible side effects of activity and attention problems. But the FDA in the US does not require labeling to be as apparent. We honestly do need additional research on these before we can draw conclusions. But if your child has trouble with attention or even ADHD, it's worth at least talking to your doctor. Overall, whether for ADHD or health in general, the best diet for yourself and your child is one that doesn't have as many of these ingredients. These typically often come with foods that have high processed sugar, high fat and high salt, and other processed ingredients. So it's better to avoid these in general. Really stick to as fresh ingredients with as few preservatives as possible. And that is a safe bet for ADHD or any other health condition. Now, moving on to another issue for food, especially with the summer, and that is about preventing foodborne illnesses. And our listener said, how do I prevent them? You know, number one is, of course, wash your hands. Our hands are one of the biggest vectors. And so make sure you're washing them appropriately and really thoroughly. Number two, you know, look where you're eating and preparing your food. If you're eating out at a restaurant, look and see. Does it look cleanly? Does it look like they're cleaning it very well? If you're at your own home, make sure you have very clean utensils and clean eating area. I know a lot of us, I remember reading something recently about washing chicken, and it was showing that when you wash chicken in your sink, so much of what you're washing the chicken actually gets sprayed all over your sink. So you want to be very careful because your sink, your counters, those are all cooking utensils, and you want to make sure that you don't combine something that's touched raw chicken with something that's going to be touching a food that's not cooked. So that's one of the things, is keep all utensils separate. If it's a marinade, whether it's a marinade, a knife, chopping block, or even your kitchen counter, if it has touched a raw meat, then it must be cleaned very thoroughly before you ever use it on something that's not going to be cooked, or you're just going to be transferring those germs and really putting yourself at risk for getting sick. Another issue is don't leave it out long. It's important to keep cold food cold and hot food hot. And you don't want to leave anything out in just ambient or air temperature for more than 1 to 2 hours, especially if it is hot. This is really a big issue in the summer when we have our picnics and our chicken salad and our other things, our egg salad that have mayonnaise in them that is not made to stay out of the refrigerator. It's going to make people sick. So you really have to keep things cold that are supposed to be cold and hot things hot. Lastly, when you're grilling, gauge by using a thermometer, not the color. A grill will often cook the outside very quickly, but the inside could still be uncooked. So use a thermometer even when you're grilling, no matter how great a king or queen of grill you are. Use a food thermometer. It's going to make yourself great, delicious food and keep your family healthy. Now on to a different issue of diet, and this was one of our listeners that said, how should I change my diet if I want to breastfeed? Now, there's a couple different guidelines. I remember when I was nursing my daughter, reading a lot of things and making sure that I was sticking to the guidelines and being very worried about it. There's a couple of premises that you should always know. One is the healthier diet, the healthier your baby is going to be eating, because whatever you eat is going to be filtered and going to them. Definitely recommend you continue that prenatal vitamin that you were taking when you were pregnant, and lots of water. You're going to be needing to drink far more water than you ever expected you would be needing to do. So if you're dehydrated, your milk supply will face that consequence. So drink lots and lots of water. Get food with lots of iron, protein, and calcium. You know, really good foods are things like beans, whole grains, vegetables, foods with lots of vitamin C, protein like eggs, dairy products. I used to eat a lot of that 2% yogurt. I found that that was really helpful for keeping up your calorie intake, because you also do need to make sure you're eating enough. Also make sure you're having a lot of calcium, not just from milk, but from dark green veggies. You can get it from tofu as well. There are some things to avoid. One, of course, you know, is avoiding alcohol. You don't want to be nursing if you've just had something to drink. So if you have had alcohol, you need to wait until that is entirely out of your system before you nurse your child again. Caffeine, and this really depends on the mother and on the baby. They usually say to limit to about 2 to 3 cups a day, so it's about 16 to 24 ounces per day, because more than that may make baby irritable, make it difficult to sleep. And I know that being a new mom is exhausting, but when the baby sleeps at night, you need to also be able to sleep yourself. So you want to make sure that you're limiting your caffeine intake. And there are some fish, those with high mercury, swordfish, king mackerel, tilefish, you want to minimize or avoid altogether. You know, pay attention to the local fish advisory when you're eating local fish to make sure there's no advisories that day. You know, if your baby is particularly fussy or having any issues, a good thing is to start looking at your diet. Keep a food diary if the baby's really having problems. Keep a food diary and a baby behavior diary. And that's really going to help you link together to see if there's any correlation between what you're eating and baby symptoms. When in doubt, talk to your pediatrician. They have seen it before and they would be more than happy to help you with this information. Your pediatrician or a lactation consultant are wonderful, wonderful resources. You can find lactation consultants at La Leche League or just by talking to your pediatrician or your OBGYN. Now, on to our next question, and that was from a user of how does my age affect fertility? So this is an issue as more and more women are waiting longer and longer to have children, and they are facing concerns of fertility. And it's really not as simple as saying the older you get, there's a direct correlation between infertility. So there's a number of other factors. And with new technologies, women are able to have children later and later with good outcome. But it is true in general and on average, as you age, you do start to have some decreased fertility that often starts to decline after the mid-30s. Older age is associated with taking longer to get pregnant and increased chances that it'll take longer than, you know, one cycle after the mid-30s. Doesn't mean it's not possible. It again just means it may take longer. Now, I said earlier, it wasn't just about age, and that's because there are some other factors. When they say people who are older have trouble, women who are older often have other comorbidities, other health conditions. They're more likely to have obesity or diabetes, high blood pressure, other things that may themselves worsen a person's chance. So that's a very different picture of somebody who has a lot of health conditions and they're 38 versus a very healthy 38-year-old who doesn't have all of those things. They will not have the same chances of pregnancy and they're going to have very different fertility aspects. So it's really important to note, why it's so important to maintain your own health, and why I tell everyone considering getting pregnant to really pay attention to your own health well before you ever get pregnant. It's one of the best things you can do and make that pregnancy a healthier pregnancy and a greatest chance of success. Last question on mommyhood, and that is, how can I get my baby to go to sleep? Every parent has asked this at some point. And, you know, there's no one right answer. There's many ways, and every parent has to find what's right for themselves and their child. Most important, there are some things you can do. Number one is to keep a consistent routine. Do the same thing every night so that your child really gets into that routine and knows that when it's bath time, they know that book, bottle, brushing their teeth, and bed are all coming. You know, don't run in the instant your baby makes a noise. If you know the baby's safe, you can give them a 30 seconds or so or a minute to make sure that they're, to see if they'll be able to sort it out themselves and get back to sleep. It's really great to let your child learn to fall asleep on their own and start that, just trying that around 1 month if you can, at a time when they're drowsy and happy. But it can be hard, and there are multiple schools of parents helping their children to fall asleep, from attachment parenting on the one hand to letting the baby cry it out. And really, what's most important is that you just stay consistent, know what works for your child, and just stick to that routine. Talk to your pediatrician if you need help, and they can help you with lots of resources. That's all the time we have for today. We'll be back next week on Share Care Radio. And in the meantime, feel free to tweet your health questions or suggestions to @ShareCareInc using the hashtag ShareCareRadio. You can also tweet to me @DrDaria. If you missed a segment, don't forget you can find every single one of them on RadioMD.com to download the podcast at iTunes Store for free. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to Share Care Radio on RadioMD, where we help you be your healthiest you. Thanks for listening, and stay well.